you're welcome to on Cree, that time when we have a bit of speaking from the heart. And I'm delighted today to welcome a very special person to reveal all, to sit back in front of the cosy fire, relax into the armchair and talk from the heart. The man I'm talking about is Fabian Boyle, a pillar of local journalism all those years ago. A man who, it might be said, single-handedly built the Armagh Observer from a nothingness of a paper in this area to something that was exceedingly popular. And that popularity based largely on the photography and the writing of Fabian Boyle. Much has happened in his life, and Fabian Boyle today is a journalist with one of Ireland's leading newspapers, Northern Ireland's own Irish News. And Fabian Boyle joins me now. Fabian, you've come a long, long way from those early days in the street that runs alongside the river, the Street of Mary, Mary Street.
Well, Rowan, like yourself, I came from that street. You may remember we met at a reception for the media in Belfast, and we were reminiscing about Mary Street. You were editor of News and Current Affairs at Radio Ulster at the time. And I remember when we were discussing Mary Street, one of your colleagues, BBC colleagues, David Kepper, came along, and he overheard you saying about Mary Street, and he said, "Where is this Mary Street?" And you rounded on him, surprised, and said, "Sure, there's only one Mary Street." Mary Street in Uri.
Well, there is indeed only one Mary Street. And it's a great sadness that Mary Street has changed in the way it has, because I think what has occurred in Mary Street is the rape of a family area. That street was once a street, a place of families, a place of life. Commercialism has taken over, and no one seemed to care. First of all, it was pubs came into it. Next, it was all kinds of shops came into it. And the one or two traditional shops were there. They developed and they stayed. But this influx of commercialism into Mary Street wiped out the humanity of the place.
Well, it's difficult for anyone who now goes down Mary Street on a Thursday or a Saturday to think of the little backwater it used to be. And there's 22 little homes there, two up and two down. And yet it produced a whole plethora of traders and tradesmen, joiners and journalists like ourselves, with an MP, Michael Keogh, your former boss,
and
there were lots of councillors there. Michael Keogh was council chairman, of course. There was councillors Jerry Mulholland, Owen McEvitt, your father, of course.
Ah, yes.
And then we had Liam O'Reilly, the furniture magnate,
right.
Antique dealer Hugh McCabe, and we had the chemist Felix McNally, and of course your uncle Larry.
That's
right. So then, of course, there's Father Tave Carroll, and the Devlins, Jackie and Jerry Devlin, who are very popular in the town. And we had people like Pascal Kearney. There was the McKenna family, Patsy McKenna, Mrs. Torrymans.
That's right.
There was two of her brothers were in religious life, Father Gerard, who was recently ordained.
He had been a married man. His wife died. He was widowed, and then
he was a very late vocation.
Yeah.
And then there was a Christian brother who was head of the Sacred Heart Grammar School in Belfast for a period.
That was Joe. McKenna.
I'm not certain.
It was Joe.
Was it Joe?
Yeah. He had very heavy responsibilities in West Belfast. He was involved in the amalgamation of two colleges there and did very, very well. That was Joe McKenna. Who else have we got?
Well, there was the girls, of course. There was my sister Madge, and Mrs. Harry Stokes. There was Mavis McKeown.
Yeah.
Married Mrs. Billy Little.
Aye.
And you had the Mona Kearney, Brady McCabe, Iris Hillen, Dipna Lundy.
The name.
Name is O'Hagan.
And Jackie Lundy, he went off to America.
Joined the US Air Force.
Goodness,
I don't know if he fought in like Vietnam or not.
Goodness gracious.
His mother still hale and hearty.
And one of the people still living in Mary's.
Quite right, too. Yeah. She must be in her late 70s. Yeah. Then was Mary Carey, Susanna Cunningham. You see these girls swinging from ropes in the lamppost, playing hopscotch.
Do you remember that?
And we would be playing, I was a little bit rather before your time.
Yeah. I don't think so.
We'd be playing cowboys and Indians in gangs.
Do you remember we used to play at the Market Gates? We'd use the Market Gates as goalposts for the football.
Oh, yeah.
and the policeman would come round the corner on his bike.
Yes.
We'd all run like Billy-O to get away from the policeman.
That's right.
God, nowadays people would just throw stones at him and wouldn't worry, you know.
That's right. Oh, we had no problem. There was no traffic, you see, maybe one car an hour or so.
I got into awful trouble once with Andy Mackett here. Andy was the lamplighter.
That's right, yes.
Andy, a lovely, lovely man, a great Newry man. And Andy was the lamplighter coming up Mary Street. And I hope if Andy's listening, my apologies in advance, Andy. I remember shooting a pop gun at him as he lit the lamp outside the door.
Yes.
And there was one of these little corks went into it and it went out and it hit Andy in the backside or something.
But we had no problem.
He gave out stick.
But we had no problem playing football and things like that on the street.
No.
Like, there was absolutely no way. The stalls would be deserted during the week. Little wooden stalls.
Do you remember them? And they would have a canvas cover there on the
stalls. That's right, the canvas cover.
The canvas cover and the lamp lights there and the people with the wheelbarrows going up and down the street.
And Willie Rafferty would bring all the big wickerwork baskets from the station. The railway station was in operation at the end of our street. We had a magic situation there because we had a railway station at the end of our street. The Clanroy River flowed past our street.
In fact,
we could trail our fingers out through the back door and imagine we were on board a ship.
That's right.
Then, of course, you had the seagulls wheeling and diving for food, you see, and you had the variety market.
And really, you know, if we'd been able to get into a boat at the back door, we could have ended up in Hong Kong or Honolulu
or wherever.
Of course,
you almost did end up in Hong Kong. I remember telling you about your voyages in the South Seas and all that.
But the man who had of me and anything to do with boats was Hugh McCabe. He used to keep a boat tied to the back door
in the river. Oh, he was an authority on the Newry.
Oh, I loved it.
In the Newry Open Canal.
And he kept it there.
And of course, he had a business in the market himself. Like my father, of course, he had a green grocery business and a second-hand furniture business. In fact, he used to hawk herrings all over South Down and South Armagh. And he would keep his horse up in a field at the top of Courtney Hill. And it would be my job to go up each morning with a rope and a hunk of bread to entice the horse over and get the rope on. So we'd go at walking pace down Courtney Hill, and when we'd get to the top of Mary Street, I'd dig in my heels and gallop like Roy Rogers down to the market.
Here enter Fabian Boyle the cowboy.
That's for sure. And of course, my dad, as you say, was a very familiar figure at the market gate.
I always remember him at the back market gate where Peggy Phillips had her place there in those days, in behind the opening there, and he had a stall with herrings there.
That's right.
All fresh herrings.
Yes. And I used to fill in for him in the school holidays there, you see, and I had to come out of the usual patter. There used to be a great patter. Geordie McGivern was another character.
What was the cry? What would you have shouted to get people interested in the herrings?
It described the herrings as fresh, fair and lovely like a newly married woman. Or did melt in your mouth and run down your belly like a racehorse.
Ah.
And they'd be great for young married women because it made them jump in their sleep.
Oh, I see. This wasn't found as sort of sexist talk.
No, this was regarded as kind of... we didn't understand words like sexist at that time.
Yeah, didn't exist.
No, they didn't exist. This was long before the permissive society. You know, and people took things literally. You know, they didn't read any double meanings.
There's no innuendo.
And of course, my father's very generous. Whenever he'd be giving out the herons, he'd say, three more to him again, three more to begin, six more to again, three more to begin, and one in for the child. There was always one in for the child.
Isn't that amazing?
You know,
he was a man of great kindness, Fabian.
He was. He was a tremendous person. He'd been in the old IRA.
Yeah.
And he was from O'Meath. And he and his brother, Hugh, they had taken the Republican side in the Civil War. And whenever the Free State government came in, they had to get out.
Yeah.
So they came to live in Newry, my father in Mary Street, and Hugh up in Chapel Street. And in fact, one of Hugh's sons, Ryder Cup is very much in vogue now. He was a Ryder Cup golfer. He played for the Ryder Cup. And a brother of his, Father Willie, who was a priest, obviously, he married myself and my wife. But he had been a member of... They went to live in Birmingham afterwards. And he was a member of the Birmingham Six Committee. And in fact, he performed a marriage ceremony for Paul Hill and Kennedy's Kennedy's.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So the link is there all the way to Washington from Meath, Mary Street, Washington.
But he received a lot of harassment afterwards because of his involvement, and the bishop posted him over to Florida, where he became a parish priest.
That's a hard punishment.
But there's an amusing little anecdote connected with that. Now, he was showing, this was last year during the World Cup, and he was showing a local couple around Carol and her husband,
yes.
Mr. Hoghy.
Yes.
He was showing this group of people around the church, you see, and he heard this northern accent. And he said, "What part of the north are you from?"
Yes.
And he said, "We are from Newry."
Yeah.
And he said, "I was born in Chapel Street in Newry, in Highwalk." And he told them that the night before the Republic of Ireland played Mexico in the World Cup, the Mexican centre forward went to confession to him. And at the end of the confession, he asked Father Willie to give him a blessing that he could score against the Republic of Ireland.
That was a very difficult request.
For a Newry man.
Oh, you couldn't. Did he give the blessing?
Well, if he did, it was a conditional blessing. The reservation.
Serious reservations.
Reservations.
And but I always remember, as I say, your father, he wore the hat, the big broad-rimmed hat, and he was there giving the herrings out. And in many, many ways, I'm sure there would have been families all those years ago who might have depended on the extra three herring and the one for the child as well.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised because, I mean, it was a very Spartan existence during the wartime and post-war years. And we were very fortunate in that the my father had fresh vegetables, and of course we had herrings for breakfast, dinner, and tea.
Yes,
it all came. My mother was a tremendous cook, you know.
And it's amazing to think of it. If you were to go to Roscoff, into Paul Rankin in Belfast today, and order a herring, that this top class restaurant would be charging about 15 quid for a main course of herring.
Yes, and just talking about top class restaurants, as I mentioned, one of the residents of the street at that time had been the Kills.
Yes.
And their son was Michael Keogh, who's now a barrister and formerly a journalist with the Irish Times.
Michael's at the bar in Northern Ireland and the Republic, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Something similar to Paddy O'Hanlon, the former politician, yes.
Well, like ourselves, he was born in the same terrace myself, and at that stage, meals would have been rather frugal.
Yeah.
We would have had maybe porridge for breakfast, maybe soup or stew for dinner. And, you know, so it fascinated and amused me later to read Michael doing the table for two column in the Irish Times and talking about these cheeky little wines and so on and so forth.
I think the cheeky little wines we would have had in Mary Street would have been of a white colour, probably buttermilk.
Buttermilk would have been
from a cow on the eastern slope of Ballyhoolan than a great.
Well, now, back in the 40s and the 50s, well, I was a member of the Cathedral Boys Choir.
I never knew you could sing.
Mr. Delafay, he's a
lovely
man.
Did you sing with Delafay?
He was a brilliant man, lovely man.
God, but
apparently he ended up in rather poor circumstances.
Really?
Yeah, I understand that. But he had a lovely voice, you know, and there at what they call Solemn High Mass, you know, he would take the solo part himself, and you know, we would bring in the responses, you know. And I feel it. Were you in the choir yourself, Ron?
I was for a while.
Is that right?
But then, I don't know, I never. I sort of went out of tune very easily and couldn't be bothered with me.
Well, you can remember maybe it was still in existence in your time, the Holy Family Confraternity.
One of the greatest bits of carry on in the whole history of Roman Catholicism.
Did you think so?
And I tell you this, I think that the whole thing started to go down the tubes when they killed the Holy Family Confraternity.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I thought you were referring to the Holy Family Confraternity.
That's what I am referring to.
No, but that was the thing that was the problem.
Well, no, I said it was great.
It was great
because you had the church and the cathedral on a Tuesday night filled with people.
Yeah.
You had priests like Father Lynch in the pulpit giving out and saying the prayers and saying the rosaries.
Father Boyd was it?
Father Boyd, Father Burke, and all the rest of them.
And Father Boyd used to ride his motorcycle around the town, rounding up, you know, Rakelskin characters. They'd be at the street corners playing football and pitch and toss. And the women would encourage him to root out the Dodgers. He'd have a quiet time at a depression time.
He would. But, I mean, I really do believe that was the moment the whole thing started to go wrong, because there came the time when it was inconvenient for some reason for priests to actually hold the confraternity. Mm. And suddenly all these men and women were on another night, all disappeared.
The Sacred Heart Confraternity.
The thing wasn't full anymore. Mm. And then you had the masses on a Saturday night instead of the Sunday. Once upon a time, the Saturday night was for going to the Florentine cafe to have your Horlicks or your milk or your coffee and your snack or the snack bar. Indeed, the Saturday night was never for the observance of the responsibilities of the Sunday.
That
has changed.
But they're stretching things a little.
Is it any wonder that I've become an agnostic, a proud agnostic? Any wonder at all?
Well, an agnostic is someone who hasn't made up their mind. So,
well, that's the story of my life.
But I know, looking down from the gallery, you know, you could look at this spectacle like you had men in soiled dungarees sitting side by side with men in pinstripe suits. You'd have doctors, lawyers and labourers.
Yeah.
Like you had affluent and the destitute kneeling side by side.
Do you remember that?
I do vividly remember.
And the boys in the pinstripes wouldn't sort of turn their noses up and shuffle a wee bit to the other side.
No way. And then there was the annual reunion.
That would have been at the confraternity.
That would have been the confraternity on Tuesday night. And then you'd have the annual reunion. You'd have thousands joining in huge chorus. Lauda si on Salvatore.
Lauda si on Salvatore.
And then we'll be marching out the procession. It'd be God bless our Pope.
Well, that was another good one.
And that would rock the pillars.
God bless our Pope, the great, the good. I remember it well.
And then I remember one night there was BBC engineers there waiting to record a programme by Mr. Delafay. And they're open-mouthed like an astonishment at this, because nothing existed in any other denomination, you know. Working-class people and middle-class people all together. On a Tuesday night, thousands. But I think it fell victim like to the change in times and customs, television. Then, of course, at that time, there was no Derrybeg, no Barcroft, no Mournview, Greenfield, Drumlane hardly existed. So when you got the population scattering away out of the suburbs, you lost the central focus. And on the television, especially Coronation Street becoming on, Neighbours, I don't know if Neighbours would exist then, but those programmes, people got tied into them.
Yes.
You know, and I think that was one of the reasons. But it shows you what sheltered lives we lived. I remember when I was at the Abbey Grammar School in the senior class, I remember one of my classmates, who shall be nameless, was spotted going out with a Protestant girl out to Lover's Lane out at Ashgrove, near where you live yourself.
I do indeed.
A couple of days later, a priest came up and lectured us on the evils, you know, the occasions of sin, which could arise from mixing with girls of the opposite gender.
Oh, I see, girls of the opposite.
But obviously, the girls who were over the wall from us in the Sacred Heart School didn't pose the same problem.
Well, they were okay.
They were felt, you see.
I have to say, I long ago stopped going to confession when it struck me that the possibility that in some of the content of my confessions might possibly have caused an occasion of sin for the priest. Yeah. So I thought maybe I'll be gentle to him. I'll not give him this to worry about anymore.
Although I will admit there that sometimes you'd get the boys would be peering over the wall at the girls out playing camogie in their gym slips.
A wondrous thing.
Oh, yeah, and some of the nuns would alert the patrolling brothers.
Yes.
And they'd come and they would...
Well, nowadays, the nuns and the brothers wouldn't be... they'd be none that we would
we'd
know.
We'd not pursue that.
Not a single individual that we would know, but the way of the church these days with people taking flight and doing all kinds of things at all sorts of places in the world. The religion has changed to such an extent.
Well, the personnel have changed. It was Gandhi who said, I like your Christianity, but I don't like your Christians.
This is the great defence of the church, and I would expect nothing less from you, Fabian. Absolutely wonderful. The other great church thing we were all involved in years ago, it happened every year, the Corpus Christi procession. That was a thing of majesty.
Yes, and you had all sections marching behind the priest underneath the canopy. And I think it's still in existence.
Still in existence. I don't quite know whether it's as popular today.
Well, the confraternity formed the backbone of that.
I have a remembrance, I must tell you this, of, and it always surprised me, of police officers in Uri actually saluting floating as canopy passed. Do you remember that?
I don't know about the candy, but certain are very reverential towards it.
I remember that. I remember seeing that, which is a surprise. But you talked about your father coming north because of the Civil War and things like that. Does that mean you grew up in a political household?
Well, I wouldn't say it'd be strongly political. All I can remember is that after we had our baths each Saturday night in the tin bath in front of the fire, he would, we'd sit on his knee and he'd be singing these songs like "The Boys of Wexford" and "The Night the Newton Hamilton Barracks Went to Blazes." And he was a great mimic. He would mimic the train used to go up towards Clog, chugging steam train. And he used to mimic by saying, "Fad them people, decent people, fad them people, decent people. Bugger a lot, bugger a lot."
This is a new side of Michael Boyle that's coming out here, because I never saw him in this light. I just saw the jolly man there at the selling the herrings and over at the shop.
With a great sense of humour, there's no doubt about it.
When did he die?
76 now.
Do you miss him greatly, or did you miss him greatly?
Well, he was I was very close to him, all right, because when I came back from England, most of the family had married, had gone. I have a brother in Glasgow. I have my Tony, Tony?
Yes, I do.
He's in wholesale. He was in wholesale greengrocery business with Raymond McGovern, who died recently. And then there's Oliver and Larry. They're well known in local and sporting circles. Oliver's chairman of the Glasgow Celtic Supporters Club. And Larry, he was a leading goal scorer in the Cannon Band League for 5 years.
We're 20 minutes into our discussion and we haven't yet talked about your journalism. Yeah. When did Fabian Boyle, the young Newry man, become a journalist?
Well, Fabian Boyle became a journalist by accident. I was a bus conductor in London and my mother sent over a cutting from the Armagh Observer saying they wanted a reporter. By the way, John Major was unable to join the London Transport, so it wasn't an unprestigious calling,
Very, very important calling. And the other calling was, of course, that traditional calling of the Irish mother, finding a device, finding a means to get the son home.
Oh, yes. She reckoned that London was a den of iniquity,
Was it?
Well, at that stage, I was a very sort of innocent person. In fact, I remember, out of curiosity, going into Soho one day, Denmark Street, and I saw all these pictures of these models, all these ladies in various stages of undress on the wall, and they described themselves as models. And I thought, photography must be very popular, I thought.
So this is what you thought you were going to come back to in the Armagh Observer's domain.
Anyway, I got this cutting from my mother, wanting to rescue me. So I came back over and had a trial period with Mr. Mallon. He said, "I think you're too shy and diffident to be a reporter." So I made a bargain with him to accept low rates, for a period. And eventually I was taken on to the staff. I'm not going into details with it, but I became a reporter then.
That's how you joined the Armagh Observer. That's when your journalism began. I should say, before we go any further, I apologise to the listeners at home, something which exists here, it existed in the BBC when we were doing all kinds of renovations there. The noise of the digger away in the background, unfortunately it's finding its way into the microphone's field, and we're hearing a little bit of it in the background. But I think we'll persevere, because the nature of the story is interesting enough to merit that, Fabian.
Right. Well,
Take me further.
When I came back from London now to start the journalism here, by good fortune, the local political and sporting season was about to be dramatically changed. The Nationalist Party had been in control of the local council for many years. People like your old boss, Michael Keogh, Barney McShane, Quinn Bennett, a lot of your listeners would know these people, Joe McCrudden, Jerry Rankin. I think your dad was a member of the...
He was.
The Irish Citizens Association.
Called ICA, yes.
Irish Citizens Association. Yeah. Well, now, there was a new Labour group that came on the scene then. People like Tommy Markey. Tommy
Tommy, who, yes, I remember well. I always remember Tommy when the swimming pool opened. He was great pride in having created the swimming pool for the people of Newry.
Oh, he did a tremendous amount during the 60s for Newry, and I don't think it has ever been recognised. There's not one street, one building named after him.
And a book has never been written about Tommy Markey.
No.
It seems the sort of thing that ought to have been done.
Well, Eugene Markey, I think, is reprinting an article which I did some years ago in the Irish News.
Yeah, there's much more to tell about Tommy. He was
like,
there.
All his housing estates.
He either loved him or hated him. There was no in-between.
Well, there was that controversial thing which probably caused
the taking of the salute.
The salute. He had been a member of the Irish Labour Party.
Yeah.
They came to power in the late 50s and he became chairman. Well, now, he was an ex-serviceman and proud of it. And this invitation came to take the salute of the Irish Guards. And there was a lot of controversy in the town. He took the salute and he was expelled from the Irish Labour Party. And he formed his own party then.
As you would expect from a man like Tommy. Did that salute occur out at the Clanrye car park?
Exactly,
where the fold is today and the post office is.
I had a photograph for many years of him actually doing that.
I always remember Captain Terence O'Neill coming there to launch a civic week.
Yes.
And O'Neill was greeted by that great Newry man, W.V. Hogg, William Vint Hogg, who sported a rose all the
every
time
day.
In his lapel every day. And Hogg was welcoming the Prime Minister, and the crowds were there in their thousands with babes in arms. And Hogg said to the Prime Minister, "This is Prime Minister," he said, "you're very, very welcome to Newry." He said, "It's great to have you here. You can see, Prime Minister, I think it's marvellous," he said, "to see all these people with their babies in their arms." Hogg is reputed to have said back immediately in his inimitable style, "Well, Prime Minister, they mightn't have much to do during the day, but they certainly know how to keep busy at night." Whether that's true or not, it's another matter.
Once or twice, people like W.V. Hogg would get me into trouble because I had photographed various socials. And after a few drinks, these people would begin to relax. And to be sitting under some lady, happened to be sitting beside them, they'd put her arms around them and say, "Take our photograph."
Oh, yes.
Big joke. Yeah. But when it would appear in the paper, W.V. Hogg, President of Chamber of Commerce, with his partner, and wouldn't have been his wife.
Quite innocently, of course.
Oh, quite innocently, because the man would have been inebriated anyway.
Would have been totally, and he would have been enjoying the nature of the evening.
Yeah.
And when the photograph appeared, it might have been misunderstood.
Definitely it would have been misunderstood. The same problem arose with Maurice Hayes, who was the brains behind Down's GAA.
And this man had
there was a celebration function in the Ardmore Hotel. He was at it. He was sitting beside, there was four at the table facing each other. Man and woman. I took each two in turn, and I asked for the captions, took the names of the first pair. Then I said, "By the way, who's that lady sitting beside Mike? It's beside Morris." He said, "That's his wife." So I put in the caption, "Mr. and Mrs. Morris Hayes."
Yes.
He's a recent ombudsman, as you know.
Of course.
So when you're talking about socials, like...
But I have to say this, I'm assuming this is true, so truth is our defence, and should any libel occur, any suggested action for libel occur. This is truth that we're telling here. We're remembering accurately back into our past as young journalists in Newry.
Well,
socials, you were saying, yes?
But by sheer good fortune as well, the social scene was really swinging then. You had the show bands and all, and all the dances. And I remember they'd put the photographs in the Observer were so popular that the dance promoters, putting adverts in the paper, would put at the bottom, "Observer photographer will attend." Just as nowadays to say someone from neighbours or crossroads would attend. And I'd go to the side of the stage, I'd tell the MC I was there, he would announce over the microphone, "The Observer photographer's here," and there'd be a stampede up to the stage, and I'd carry out a chair, stand up on it, and take photographs of each of the sections. Unfortunately, a lot of them would surge from one group into the next. And so there's a lot of duplication.
Well, it was said that everyone's entitled to their 15 minutes of fame, and in the days before television, as essentially these were, These people were experiencing their 15 minutes of fame in the newspaper. Mm. But one of the things that always offended me, because I covered many of the same functions as a young journalist.
Should we go into one particular event?
I think we may.
Amusing event. Yes.
I think we may. But the thing that always struck me is this sort of, hey, take my photograph. All this sort of caterwauling, if you like, from the multitude.
Well, that really got you into trouble one night.
Do tell me.
It was at the Boulevard Hotel in Newry, now long demolished. Yeah. But you and I used to go to cover these functions together.
Dominic Cunningham used to be there, later to go on to the Independent. He was from the Rough Island Outlook.
And Johnny Priestley was sometimes.
Johnny Priestley was there.
And Mickey O'Rourke.
Mickey was there.
But this was in order to intimidate the promoters to get the picture we wanted. Because if we went individually, we'd go and say, could have photographed the presentation. Sorry, the captain isn't here. Sit down and enjoy yourself. What are you having to drink? Those are fatal words. It meant your whole schedule was thrown. So we went to the Boulevard to start off our night's itinerary. I think we had three other places to go to that night. So it was a buffet, and some of the people were sitting there, and we took the photographs. Of course, we were for rival newspapers, so we mixed them up a bit.
There wasn't a great rivalry.
No, but we couldn't have the exact same pictures.
We reached an accommodation.
Which our employers weren't aware of.
No, of course.
So anyway, we went to this buffet, we took our pictures, and we were about to go out when the waitresses started laying out the stuff, the materials for the buffet. There were sandwiches, hot sausage rolls, there was hot apple tarts and all. So what we decided to do was to take some of this with us and have it along the way in the car. So we got the napkins, paper napkins, and we put in our pancakes, and all these little bits and pieces, little mushroom tarts and all. We wrapped them up, put them inside our anorak, and we were heading for the door when someone called, Rowan, what about that photograph you were to give me? And you had to go over and a conversation. And in the meantime, the juice was seeping through the napkin inside your anorak. And suddenly the whole lot just burst out at your feet. Well, you went through that door like a rocket.
Oh, I do. I'm bound to say I vaguely remember this, all right, but I think we recovered the victuals and we feasted at some stage.
We
of
definitely
the evening.
Did.
But the itinerary used to take us all over the place, into South Down, into South Harmony.
Yeah, well, the Ardmore.
Yes, Tees and stuff.
Ballymusgallon Hotel.
Absolutely.
The Park. Yeah. Restorvo Hotel, which is then very popular at the time.
Absolutely.
And we had to sort of fit them in, and the rated thing was to arrive in the middle of the speech making. That was really the terrible thing. But there's another amusing incident happened to me when I was taking the photographs. Maybe I'm taking up too much time, am I? But me and Mickey O'Rourke, your successor, we went down to cover a wedding at Warren Point. You see, we'd already covered one in Bessbrook.
Yes.
We covered one and we were due to get one in Restorver. So we had to wait for about half an hour, maybe an hour, for the bride to arrive. And it was a lovely sunny day. So we were sitting along the promenade there at Warren Point, near the wall, looking down at the people bathing. And we thought, well, could we not chance a little swim ourselves? So someone we knew, a couple of chaps we knew, were coming away from the beach, and we asked, could we borrow their togs? Fine, no problem. We borrowed their togs. We got kitted out, went into the water. Oh, lovely, splashing about in the lovely cool water. So we came out, and the concrete path outside the water was very hot. So I... Oh, lovely, splashing about in the lovely cool water. So we came out, and the concrete path outside the water was very hot. So and the water was lapping up over the step, you see. And I thought, well, I'll walk along the step and the water will kill me. Mm. As soon as I stepped on the concrete path, I keeled over and fell on the back of my skull. You see.
Oh.
And I was stunned for a couple of minutes. I couldn't move. And then finally the feeling came back. And Mickey says, that's a bad gash you have on your head. So I put my hand up and right enough, the blood was coming down.
Yes.
So I knew there was a doctor lived not too far away. I can't remember his name. But we ran in our swimming suits down towards the doctor. But he wasn't in. But we heard that there's a doctor at Ross Trevor. McLaughlin, Dr. McLaughlin at Ross Trevor. So we got into the car. I was still in my swimming togs. I think Mickey might have dressed by that time. And we motored down to the doctor. And he dressed the wound.
Yes.
And he put a white bandage round, you see, to keep it.
Yes, a turban, a medical turban.
Yeah, like a turban. And I said, that's fine. So we pass a little stall, and there's these cowboy hats, you know, Western straw hats. And I thought, well, if I put on one of those, it'll disguise the bandage, and no one will even know that I'm wearing. Because the idea of driving to... We had to go to Daisy Hill Hospital and get it stitches.
Go on, tell me.
Thought of driving to Daisy Hill through Warren Point and Uri in a turban. So I got this large hat and I put it over my turban. And at that, we were just heading back to Newry when suddenly we could hear the cacophony of car horns signalling the arrival of the bride. So I thought, my God, I've gone to all this trouble. Why not take a picture of the bloody bride?
It was the bloody you, unfortunately, under the hat.
So we went down towards the Ross Trevor Hotel.
How did they respond when they saw you coming sort of Spanish style with
this
straw hat on?
Now, when we went up, the official photographer had the bridal party lined up on the lawn.
Yes.
Remember, there's a big lawn in front of the hotel. And all the guests were gathered around. So I was still in my swimming togs. I hadn't had time to change. So there was I approached, and what I didn't realise until afterwards was that the sombrero didn't actually cover the turban,
yeah.
It actually was sitting on top of it. So there was this apparition approaching the bride in swimming togs with a turban and a cowboy hat on top of the turban
blessing.
And a camera around his neck.
It's a blessing you weren't arrested as an early paparazzi.
I'm sure each party must have said, he must be with that family.
No one wanting to offend you remotely in case they
offended
the host.
Everybody thought I was with the other crowd, you see, and that
that's a great story.
That was another little
there's
little
so
humor.
Many of them. And then, of course, the things moved a stage further when you left the
Observer.
The Observer, and you became involved with what I thought was a very fine paper, but didn't quite get off the ground.
That's right, we were
the Frontier Times.
That's right, a brilliant paper.
Yeah.
And it really went very well.
Did indeed.
But for particular reasons, which I'll not mention here, unfortunately, it folded shortly, so I joined the Irish News.
That's right.
But, of course, before that, during the 70s, it really was a rough time for journalists, as you'll remember.
Yes.
You remember being with RT and BBC
that's
at the
right,
time. You were
right.
Telling me about Motorman, etc., although you said you'd prefer to draw a veil over that whole period. But, like, to actually be on the scene where 9 people have been killed, like up at the customs clearance station, and to see firemen and ambulance men picking up little pieces of bodies.
These were difficult times.
Yeah. And to see a head in one garden and a trunk of a body in another. You know,
what did these things do to you as a human being? How did you reach? I know how I reached an accommodation with the terrible things I saw.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, how did you deal with it? Did you take it home with you? Were you a nervous individual? Did you become bad-tempered? Did you become introspective?
No.
How did you deal with it?
I like to think I'm philosophical by nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that at the time, you'll remember this yourself, at the time that you were actually covering the event, you were more interested in the technical aspects of getting the best possible pictures, of getting the best possible comments, of getting the right people, of making sure, you know, that you did the best story. You were looking at it from a professional point of view. And it's only later on at night when you go to home and look at it on television, you know, the impact of it would come in. So I think sometimes maybe you get a little bit, not hardened, but you put on a kind of a shield while you're actually doing your job.
You know? I always remember, just bearing that in mind, I remember coming back from Belfast at the time of the Loyalist Workers' Strike to Newry. I'd completed two or three shifts at RTE and was on my way back to Newry to recreate for a day or two and then go back to Belfast again. And I remember heading my way back, and I was going almost into a dragnet the whole way of loyalist roadblocks.
Yes.
And I was taking side roads and coming up against a roadblock and then reversing and going another way, coming up against another cul-de-sac, going ahead. And I all the time felt I was going tighter and tighter into a kind of a noose, and there was a great deal of worry involved in it.
Mm.
But I remember coming up the footpath at home, and one of the children jumped out to say, hello, to frighten me, kind of thing.
Yes.
And I struck out.
I know.
And just almost hit the child at that particular moment.
Yeah.
And
like a coil.
Absolutely, as a result of some of the things that we came through. But I always remember the beginning, and I think you were there that day as well, when they pushed the police tenders into the canal.
I know it only too well because I was on top of one of the police tenders.
You were on top of one of the tenders.
Yeah. And it was being pushed, and
that's
I felt this movement.
Yeah, don't be pushing the microphone there. We'll hear noise there. But I mean, you were on top of the tender as it was moving.
Getting the best possible picture.
And I was up on top. I was halfway up the telephone
that's
pole,
right.
Outside the light pole outside the Savoy Cinema, filming from there.
Right.
So we had a remarkable time there.
Yeah.
That was,
and I think the most momentous occasion I remember was the massive march after Bloody Sunday.
Yeah. But that particular day, before we leave it, off the Savoy Bridge, that march down Monaghan Street in Newry was led by politicians of every flavour and hue.
Right,
I remember Aubrey Wiley walking in that march.
He walked
march
in the front row, and he was a unionist.
Unionist until the trouble occurred.
Of course, that was a demonstration of the tremendous cross-community spirit which was in Newry.
Well, that was Newry.
Which I think has been responsible for the fact there's been very little sectarianism in Newry. I mean, the Newry Council from the outset was very, very generous to the unionist Protestant community. They had 15% of the population, yet they were given one-third of the houses to allocate. And also, all through the 60s, it was a form of coalition between Newry Labour and unionists, and there was always a unionist vice chairman of the council. And that is the reason why I think that we've been spared a lot of the bitterness that places like Armagh, Dungannon, and Belfast, etc., has experienced.
You remember, as I remember, smoky council meetings when the people gathered in the old town hall, in the old boardroom.
I didn't realise they were smoky, but my wife told me afterwards.
Oh, yeah, when you were home,
the stench
from
coats,
it.
Yeah.
Great characters from those days. Who do you remember?
Well, I remember Tommy McGrath. Would have been one of the most outstanding. Of course, the McGrath Centre is named after him.
What made Tommy McGrath, in your view, outstanding?
I think it was really genuine interest in ordinary people, you know, and a lack of any ambition, personal ambition. I met him from my very first days with the Observer, and he was always so helpful, so kind, and in every way.
He was a human being.
He was a genuine human being.
Yeah.
There were a lot of very good. Tommy Kelly, of course, was.
He was an early chairman.
But Markey sort of overshadowed him. Markey was so ebullient and not so domineering, but he was a very forceful personality.
If I can use the word, he was a brute of a chairman. He imposed himself on this.
And he had a tremendous memory. He could shoot you down by drawing little things from your background, which you had practically forgotten about. And a great man, he could turn things around. If he proposed something and it wasn't getting support, he could swing around and propose the thing that he was, you know. But I remember he had terrible duels with Tommy McGrath. He didn't like.
No,
he used to say, sit down, little man.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that went on.
And because McGrath was a rather dedicated socialist, and probably would have. Tommy would have felt he was in favour of Darwin's theory.
Yes.
He would have said, well, you may think your forebears swung from the trees, but mine certainly didn't, you know.
There was a great cut and thrust. There was a great deal of a great deal of passion put into the debates in those days.
Yeah. Of course, you had other personalities then too, like Sean McAteer.
Oh,
and
yes.
Andy Boyd.
Yes.
J.B. Kelly.
Old Andy Boyd.
Old Andy Boyd.
Old Andy Boyd.
Yeah, and there was people like Eamon Fitzpatrick, of course, the news agent.
Yes.
He had Joe McGuigan, who did tremendous work for the Bosco.
Yeah.
You know, he had a shoe shop in Monaghan Street. Dollar Duffy Senior. You know, and you had Seamus Mann, a photographer.
That's right. Seamus was always a gentleman of photography.
He was.
He had such a way with him. He moved as though on a magic cloud or carpet. He just glided around
very
the front
unflappable.
Of the cathedral
very
and did his business.
Yeah.
And Mr. Duffner, of course, himself in those days, the head photographer. You went in to get photographs, and Duffner would shout in from the front, Whitey, have you the photographs, Mr. Hart?
Drogheda accent,
which is always great.
And then you'd Hugh McCrink, the Undertaker.
Yes. We used to worry about Hugh, because if you thought he was looking at you too long or too hard as you went up Monaghan Street... Was he actually measuring you? You see, those were things to be aware of.
I would be a bit surprised. Then there's old Tom McKay, worked in, he was a great GM.
Goodness gracious, Shamrocks.
Christy Hughes as well in music.
Yeah.
Biff Grimes. Those are some of the... Gussie Begley.
Is Gussie the man? He was a seaman. He went deep sea.
Yeah.
And there's the great story came back of Gussie's death, wasn't there, in the South Pacific, eaten by a shark or something.
And the Frontier Sentinel had an obituary, a eulogy, in fact, but what a fine man he was.
I've heard this to be said. Is that true?
As far as I remember now, it was
I know
true.
The way you said it was the Frontier Sentinel. My
old
paper and not yours that did it. You wouldn't admit to the observer making such a mistake.
I wouldn't even know the man was dead.
Yeah.
I didn't hear the reports that he was dead until it was all...
But some of the names we're mentioning came from Ballabot, in your area, a great area of the town.
Oh, yes, it was. The Dominican, of course, was the main influence there a lot. You know, in fact, you were regarded as Dominican Catholics.
That's right.
You know, it was almost a separate sect. You know, and of course, you had some great men in the Dominican Order there. You know, although my experience even of the Catholic clergy over the years, I haven't much experience of the present people. But in the '50s and sixties, I remember, as say, Father Boyd, you had Father Burke, you know, Father Esler, Father Lynch.
Yeah.
And nobody could ever accuse them of some of the...
No, the Catholic Church has suffered greatly because of the actions of the few. I would be more humanist than anything else nowadays, but I do recognise that there is a force for good within Christian religions. That's to be applauded. But the Catholic Church itself has suffered greatly because of the bad actions of the few and its inability to distance itself from some of those actions sufficiently.
There was an article in the Irish News by a priest, and he felt that this could be a real cleansing process. You know, that the church has had far too much power and influence. People were afraid to question anything that the clergy had said, and they were held in awe. And they're automatically chairman of this, chairman of that. And nobody there, they were the pillars of the church. And people forgot that they were human beings.
There's a greater accountability nowadays.
No, there should be. But I think there's an awful lot of way to go. I don't think Cahill Daly is the person to lead a revolution.
Always remember, it kind of summed up a certain attitude inside the Catholic Church. When I was with RTE, I started a wedding photography business. Having a large family, I thought I would provide a business
for them.
And I was doing this as well as working for RTE, and I suppose I would have been moderately well known from some of the reporting I did from RTE in Belfast. And I remember going up, as I would always do, going to cover a wedding, up 15 minutes or what am I talking about? I would have gone up the day before to sort of touch base with the priest and say, look, I'm coming to do the wedding. It will be done correctly. I just want to make sure I don't cause any trouble. And I always remember going up to Clog Chapel to speak with the man in charge then, who wasn't Henry Otherman, it was his predecessor.
Canon Toner.
And it may well have been.
Yeah.
And
he was a real reactionary.
Well, I sort of presented myself to him and said, hello, I am just coming to say, and he said, sacristy. And he waved me aside as though I was some piece of nonsense that didn't really require any attention to be paid to him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got inside, I said, look, I'll start this conversation again. My name is, and for I was some kind of penny dropped for him.
Yes.
And he said, oh, you're the RTE man. So suddenly because of my status, yes, my position with
you're
RTE,
elevated immediately.
I was going to be treated
human
somewhat
being.
Better.
Someone
you know,
to be.
If it had been somebody else who couldn't...
A taxi driver or something.
He wouldn't have had the same treatment. Mm. So all of that thing needed to be cleansed. All of that thing needed to be... Mm. It filled me with disgust that... Mm. He was treating me well, yes, because of his perception that I was in some way important and importantly, yeah, attached, oh, yeah, to
that's
radio
the
television
problem. That's the problem you find in journalism, especially if you have any kind of an executive position. People phone up to you, but it's only in order to get something back.
Yeah.
Especially PR people.
Yes, of course.
I remember being on the day news desk, and I was inundated with people up till dinner time, and they'd ring up and say, yeah, hey Ben Boyle, where are you? Oh, Newry. And we'd start into a whole problem, but do you know so-and-so in Newry? And you knew quite rightly they had no interest whatsoever in Newry, you or anything. You're waiting for the magic word, by the way.
Yes.
By the way, we have this little function coming up.
Are you able to come along?
By the way, did you get our facts? By the way, by the way, by the way.
Fabian, we head inexorably towards the end of our chat. We have another 5 minutes to go, and then we'll have a little bit of music to finish us off.
Well, I can't sing wrong.
We'll be playing it for you, sir. What does the future hold for Fabian Boyle, Newryman journalist, man now spending part of his time in Belfast with the Irish News? Mm. What do you plan for the future? Have you anything big happening in the near future?
Well, I was hoping maybe to put together some little books which would have contained segments of my life so far. For instance, this book about the Down GA team of the 60s. I unearthed a huge cache of photographs. Some of them were in the Irish News on Monday there. And these, I also did features on each of the individual players 10 years later. So I feel that this would really find a lot of support among people who were there or who heard about the exploits of that team.
Yeah.
You've got people arriving at Eamon Street Station, young, 35 years ago, and now they're, was at 50. Now there they are, young.
Caught on the steps of the station. Steps,
and in the stands, and action pictures. And then I was hoping maybe to follow it up with something which would involve the Troubles. Combine it with civil rights, and maybe before that, Easter commemoration parades. And then another one maybe on Newry in the good old days. Scenes from the 50s.
So it's writing, and more writing.
Well, it'll not be actually any more creative writing. It's writing which I've already done, and simply a matter of collating it all together.
Yes.
And by the way, before I finish, I'd like to say how much I appreciate what you are doing to help young people in the Newry area get a foot into journalism. And I think this is something unique and imaginative, which would just be typical of yourself. And I know you'll have every success, and the Irish News can be of any assistance to you. But there's definitely a lot of openings for young journalists, young programme makers. And as in fact, as I mentioned to your colleague Jennifer earlier, we have had a huge turnover of staff in the Irish News. In fact, most of our present reporters have been there less than 2 years. So we can just see the openings that are there. There's no, there's no rigid routine of people staying there to their 65.
Fabian Boyle, thank you very much indeed for those kind words and those words of encouragement to the students at Newry College. I thank you for coming in. Fabian Boyle, writer, gentleman of the lens, a man of excellence, a Newry man. Thank you very, very much indeed.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Ron, and I'm delighted to have this little chat with you again.